you very much. Is everybody present and accounted for? All right. Good morning. This is a March 9 meeting of the Finance Committee. There will be two meetings of the Finance Committee this month. We'll have a meeting here to discuss and vote on certain business, and then we'll have another Finance Committee meeting on the morning of the 23rd before the board meeting. So this morning we're going to change the order a bit. So please pay attention, because things are going to be shifted around. We're going to take up the proposed FY18 operating budget for action first. Afterwards, as information items, we will discuss the capital budget for FY18, and we will discuss the debt issuance items that are also on the agenda. But we will hold those items for a vote on the morning of March 23rd in the finance meeting of that day. So may I get a motion to amend the agenda as just described?
So moved.
A second for that change, please. Thank you. All in favor of the adopted amended agenda, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. The agenda is approved as amended. So our final preliminary matter is the approval of the minutes from our February 23rd meeting. So can I get a motion to approve those minutes? Thank you. A second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Thank you. The minutes of February 23rd, 2017 are approved as presented. So, as I mentioned, we will first start with the request to approve the General Manager's revised FY 2018 operating budget. The revised budget, now before the committee, reflects the extensive feedback that we received on the original proposal. As we will hear from staff, our customers told us that given a choice between fare increases and cutting service, they would be willing to pay a little more to preserve existing levels of bus and rail service. Accordingly, the General Manager's revised budget preserves more service than originally proposed. On Metrorail, off-peak headways will remain unchanged instead of being extended. On Metrobus, several routes that were initially proposed for elimination will continue to operate, and on Metro Access, no customers will lose access to service as a result of changes to nearby Metrobus routes. While we must move forward with fare increases effective July 1 to lessen the impact for our most frequent bus riders and many that are also our low-income riders, the price of the Metrobus 7-day pass remains unchanged at $17.50. I'll now turn the floor over to the Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Anasecki, for our first presentation on the FY18 operating budget. Mr. Anasecki.
Before I turn it over to Dennis, I just made a few comments. First and foremost, I want to thank, obviously, the customers and the board for basically working through this with us over the last few months. And I do want to stress that we do need a decision by the 23rd so that we can implement what the board comes out with. And the only other thing that that was not mentioned is in the revised plan, I've also proposed that through the savings through the absenteeism initiative that I announced last month, that I am proposing that we establish a trust for OPEB for the future unfunded retiree health care benefits of $3 million, just so that you're aware of that, is also in the revised plan. So with that, I'll turn it over to Dennis so that he can get into some more of the details.
Thank you, Paul. And good morning, Mr. Chairman. Our goal today is to recap the general manager's initial as well as revised FY18 budget proposals. And as part of that, discussions go through the public outreach associated with the budgets. And finally, as the chairman mentioned, we'll touch on the capital improvement program and the CFA agreement, which ultimately will fund that particular project. Overall, the FY18 operating and capital budgets remain focused on safety and service reliability. The operating budget itself also builds on the management and labor cost reductions that the general manager announced last year to further reduce the burden on both the region and the riders. To recap the November proposals, if you recall, the general manager proposed an operating budget that was based on the elimination of 700 positions, which will save, beginning FY18, $42 million. That proposal also got $21 million from higher fares, by increasing headways on Metro Rail, and eliminating less efficient bus routes across the system. Those eliminations and headway adjustments would have also resulted in an elimination of 300 additional positions. But to balance the budget and erase the $290 million deficit, Metro programmed $60 million from preventive maintenance funds compared to $95 million the previous fiscal year, and that left $130 million from the jurisdictions. To start with the public outreach, I'll turn it over to Lynn.
Good morning. So as the board will recall, earlier in the year, we promoted a public comment period during which we published the general manager's original proposal in multiple languages, and we advertised the opportunities for public input, including the public hearing. We had a fairly significant grassroots outreach effort during this period, including bilingual teams that were in 49 stations in every jurisdiction, handing out information about how the public could participate in feeding back on the proposal. And we promoted a survey both online and in paper that could be left in stations. Altogether, more than 11,000 people participated this year in the budget proposal outreach. Those comments were incorporated into the equity analysis and as well as the public participation plan staff report that's been provided to the board for its consideration in the budget deliberations. Overall, I just cover a few highlights from that massive input from the public. The majority said that they found the proposal to be either very fair or somewhat fair. As the chairman mentioned, 2-to-1, by a ratio of 2-to-1, they preferred fare increases over service cuts when asked to choose between the two. It was also true that those same preferences were reflected by low-income and riders in minority, principally minority communities. The customers were further, and members of the public were further asked to rank the acceptability of their proposals. And that can be seen on this slide in terms of which of those fare and service proposals they found as most and least acceptable. The top five on this ranking do not vary by bus or rail customers. Overall, minorities found increases in rail fares, rush and non-rush, and service most acceptable, and low income found the rail non-rush and other rail passes the most acceptable. There was not a lot of variation between the jurisdictions. In fact, Virginia and Maryland were almost identical, and DC varied very little from the other two. In terms of the service proposals, the top five, again, did not vary by bus or rail. Minorities and low income, though in a slightly different order, found the top four most acceptable. And similarly, the regional difference in the top five was very slight. The only notable differential is that district participants found the elimination of Rush Plus more acceptable than other regions. I will say to the board that largely this fell on the lines of what affects you, the customer, the most. And that's, if you were to heat map this, those things that have the greatest effect on the participant were the things that they found to be of the most concern. Dennis?
Thank you, Lynn. Based on the feedback that Lynn just described, as well as the additional feedback that the board provided, Metro shifted $23 million of rail car parts from the operating budget to the capital budget. That shift itself allowed Metro essentially to add $2 million for bus lifeline service, and obviously to reserve the balance for additional adjustments with respect to fares and service, which I'll describe in a minute. And the GM just mentioned already the OPEP trust, which will be funded through additional efficiencies. So with respect to the balance of $21 million following the shift of cap pass to capital, the GM's updated budget recommendation essentially uses $12.5 million of that to reduce proposed rail and bus adjustments, and $1.5 million of that to reduce the fare increase. Specifically, with respect to the service adjustments, Metro is proposing to restore, at this point, the off-peak rail services, including the Grosvenor Turnback, which will consume $7 million. In addition, the GM has restored $5.5 million of bus services, again, across the region. And as I mentioned a little bit earlier, the seven-day bus pass will not increase, which means that any of our customers that use bus and chooses to use the seven-day pass will not see any fare increase, which ultimately leaves $7 million for various compliance initiatives that are still being refined as we work to develop training and workforce estimates in response to both FTA and NTSB recommendations. If you look at slide 13, we've tried to summarize the impact of the changes that I've just described relative to the original GM's budget proposal. So starting from the top down, you can see on the second line, rather first line down, that the shift with respect to the capital pass actually reduces the non-personnel cost by 23, as well as reduces public subsidy by $23 million. Going down one level, the bus lifeline service that I just mentioned adds $2 million to public subsidy, and but in terms of the allocation, it actually adds $1.8 million to personnel cost, about $400,000 to non-personnel, but it does increase revenue by an estimated $200,000. And it goes through, if you go down to the last line on this slide, the aggregate impact of all these changes is that the estimated revenues for next year will go up by $3 million. Personnel cost goes up by about $16 million. Non-personnel goes down by 12.4, and subsidy goes up by $500,000. But that's actually coming from the additional services that Virginia added and will be responsible for that. But the net impact on the personnel side is that it reduces significantly the 300 positions that were anticipated when the original budget was announced, down to 158. To summarize, if you look at the proposed budget and the last two fiscal years, you'll see what the revenue, expense, and subsidies look like. Essentially, if you look at last year, as you see, there was no growth in subsidy, but there is this year, and which is what this budget has tried to resolve. With respect to Title VI analysis, as you know, FTA requires that we conduct Title VI equity analysis with respect to major service and fare adjustments, and we're happy to report that the analysis in this case finds no disparate impact or disproportionate burden on the segments of our customers that are considered under this analysis. And if you look at the next slide, the key to this finding actually is keeping this seven-day pass at the current $17.50 instead of that increase. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll pause here for any questions on the operating budget.
Thank you. Have you completed your presentation on the operating budget?
Yes.
Very good. Then what we will do at this time is first entertain the motion for approval of the FY18 operating budget. Then we'll open up the floor to discussion and amendments. We'll go through discussion and the amendments, and once we've completed that exercise, we'll take a vote of the Finance Committee on approving the FY18 operating budget and recommending it to the full board for the March 23rd meeting. So I'll entertain a motion to approve the FY18 proposed operating budget. Thank you. All in favor? Mike's been wanting to do that yet? All right. All right, discussion. So just to tee off the discussion, two questions for the general manager. In the $23 million that was freed up by the rail car parts being moved over to the capital budget, a large part of that is being used for a new initiative for meeting what I understand to be FTA mandates and training, fatigue, and compliance programs. And the total of that is $7 million, since that was not part of the original general manager's budget. Could you explain where those recommendations come from and what exactly those those monies will be used for?
Sure. What it is, it's a recognition, you know, when I look back at the last year and some of the things that we've had to do on the compliance side and just across the board on the safety side, we should have probably built in that number to begin with, is to be frank. So one example, for instance, is when we dealt with the track issues, when we went and hired University of Tennessee to come in track training. The FTA, as they find things, they basically direct us to do things. So I basically want to reserve to deal with those things rather than come back at a later date and ask for those dollars. So that's really what that is. It's in effect setting the dollars aside for what we know historically where we've been, and that I'm projecting that we'll be in the future as we have to deal with these issues.
Thank you. Just a second preliminary question. In the same exercise, we went through a process to restore selected bus routes totaling $5.5 million, the value of those routes. Could you explain the process that staff engaged in with the various jurisdictions to decide what bus routes should be restored to reduce the total amount
sure,
of bus savings?
Tom and other people can weigh in, but primarily we went through the JCC and then worked with the local jurisdictions. They had obviously very different concerns that they were trying to meet. Again, dealing with the same issues, how much could they afford, what was important for their constituents. So that's where we tried to find a balance where we could to meet those different needs. Again, with the understanding that we just we have severe budget issues we have to deal with as well. Anything else?
The one thing to add there is this.
Is your mic on?
Yes, sorry. Looking at places where there are other services in the corridor or in the vicinity that may mitigate the loss of the service.
Thank you. That's very helpful. All right, I'll open the floor to amendments and further discussion at this time. Ms. Folger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to amend the proposed service changes of Metro bus service that's found in Attachment C to strike both the elimination of the Fort Lincoln shuttle line routes B8 and B9 and the modification of the Brookland Fort Lincoln line, the H6. Just so everyone knows, these changes are to non-regional routes in the District of Columbia, and after consulting with the impacted community, the district supports maintaining the current service level on these routes. So further, that once the financial impact of these proposed service restorations and fare changes have been determined, that the expense, revenue, and subsidy implications be reflected in an updated budget for the board's approval in March. Also move that these service restorations be reflected in, I think it will help our Title VI equity analysis for the board's approval at the same time.
Very good. I believe I heard a second for your motion.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
You can't. Thank you, Chris.
Do you have to finish the motion before?
You want a second again, just to be consistent with Robert's rules? Thank you. Let me just ask a question of parliament procedure to council. Should we take all of the amendments and then have discussion and vote them one at a time, or should we vote an amendment one-on-one before proceeding to the next amendment? Okay. Council recommends we do it one at a time. Very good. Just for clarification, Mr. Boulder, so by referencing that these are non-regional routes, just to be clear, this means to the extent that restoration of stores would increase the subsidy, that subsidy would be borne by the District of Columbia.
It's my understanding, Mr.
Thank
Chairman.
You. Okay. Any other discussion on Mr. Boulder's amendment? Very good. Take it to a vote. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The amendment, which we'll call Bolger Amendment 1 passes. Okay, any other amendments? Yes, Ms. Hudgens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I have a motion that reads for changes for Virginia services. Mr. Chairman, I move that to amend the General Manager's revised 2018 operating budget proposal as described in the resolution as follows. First, to modify the proposed Virginia Metro bus service changes described in Attachment C as follows. Fully restore Route 3T in Pemet Hills and Route 1C in Fair Oaks, and restore all reductions on Route 16G, HK, the Columbia Pipeline, as well as the 16 Metro Extra Service. Partially restore service in Burke Center by improving Route 18P service. On Leesburg Pike, Route 28X is being eliminated. Partially restore service by improving Route 28A. In the Lincolnia Pentagon Corridor, where Route 17X is being eliminated, partially restore service by improving Route 7W. And in the Kings Park, where Route 17A and F are being eliminated, partially restore service by retaining a truncated version of Route 17B along with the 17M. The second portion, modify the proposed 2018 fare changes described in Attachment B as follows. Change the proposed regular fare for airport routes 5A and B30 to $7.50, and change the proposed senior disabled fare for those airport routes to $3.75, or half the regular fare. Mr. Chairman, I further move that once the final impact of these proposed service restorations and fare changes have been determined, that the expense, revenue, and subsidy implications be reflected in an updated budget for the board's approval at the Board of Directors meeting of March 23rd, and also move that these service restorations be reflected in an updated Title VI equity analysis for the board's approval at the same time.
Discussion?
Changes, I think, make adjustments to some service changes that were advertised in the Virginia area, and I think by tweaking some of these, we are able to provide a more balanced service, and we also are shifting opportunity to continue, I think, some routes that are still dependent, but we can come back at another time to address those. But I think it's important that we're trying to listen as well as understand what the budget impacts are and how we can reflect those impacts as well as provide the most efficient services under that budget.
Very good. Mr. Corsi.
Thank you, Mr. Goldman. I'd just like to say, despite what appears to be the extensive list that comes out of Virginia, I would like to assure that there will be some changes in service that do result in reductions in Virginia bus lines, but the motion to restore meets, I think, a couple of important standards for Metro in this critical time. It does not make service reductions to routes that have extremely high ridership and are extremely productive from an efficiency standpoint, and the other metric of being the primary option for people to access transit in the region from where they live. So I think this is an important step to making sure we don't devalue what is relatively the shining star of the Metro system at this point, and that is Metro bus service. So that is why the Virginia jurisdictions carefully considered how to, figure out how we could replace other areas that were not as efficient, but to preserve areas that were performing very well.
Thank you. And just a couple of questions, Ms. Hudgens, on what I refer to as Hudgens Amendment Number 2. Unlike the Bolger Amendment Number 1, I think this amendment involves both the regional and non-regional routes.
That is exactly right.
And it affects routes in Maryland, the bus routes to BWI, as well as routes in Virginia. Have you made a calculation whether these changes are revenue neutral at this time?
Some are revenue neutral. Most of them have some small impact. There is a small impact on that bus piece. But what we're trying to do is, one, I think as was stated here, these are still seen as very important routes, so with a small increase in fare, we can still keep the service and we can continue to serve the riders and keep the subsidy where we can all afford it.
And since, may I make a friendly suggestion, since we're going to have a finance committee meeting on the morning of the 23rd before the board meeting, might I suggest that maybe the resolution speak in terms of bringing the calculations back to the finance committee?
Well, yes, and we can bring those, and those calculations will be updated from the chart as they are presented to us now. And so that last motion indicates to have that chart updated so that we can have
the
numbers in front of us.
Consider those changes.
That's exactly right.
Matter of fact, small changes need to be made to the budget at that
before
point.
Before the 23rd, you should be
before presenting it to the full board on the 23rd.
That's Mr. Goldman is your unofficial parliamentarian. That wasn't included in her motion.
Yes, it was.
I'm sorry.
It was.
Okay, Mr. Underwood.
Part of everybody's. Let me make sure we get it on.
Very good. Any other discussion on Adrian Amendment Number 2? Ms. Carmody?
You actually asked my question, but I just wanted to be sure on the revenue neutral point. As you look at this further, are you going to attempt to make it revenue neutral? Will there be adjustments so it comes out without increases? Is that the intent?
This resolution actually reflects what we've been able to do to affect the revenue as well as the service. And in some cases, some of it will not be. I think there will be questions in terms of whether fare increases reflect how much utilization of the service and how that then impacts us. But I think these numbers have been looked at in terms of what we've asked staff to run the numbers and give us an input as to what their impacts would be. And that's where I think it is. I don't think they're all revenue neutral.
Yeah. So we'll see that, I guess, in the Finance Committee on the 23rd.
Right.
Ms. Grossi?
Thank you.
And just to follow up on this, to Metro staff, even though we don't have final numbers at this point, we project at this point that overall these service changes would result in about $500,000 in net subsidy increase. So, you know, we're talking overall modest. We need to get the full details of how that is spread. So while it's not revenue neutral, when you're talking about something of this size, it's about as close to revenue neutral as you could think of.
Yeah, I mean, just to underscore Mr. Dorsey's point, we're talking about an operating budget of $1.8 billion.
Yes.
So in that context, $500,000 is, I don't know if I want to use the term small potatoes, but it is relatively minor. Other comments on Adrian Amendment Number 2? Very good. Take a vote. All in favor of Adrian Amendment Number 2, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? It passes.
Thank you.
Any further discussion, amendments to be brought before the Finance Committee?
Yes.
Ms. Farley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would also like to offer an amendment. I move to amend the General Manager's revised FY18 operating budget proposal as described in the resolution as follows. Modify the proposed Maryland Metro bus service changes described in attachment C as follows. Fully restore Route T14 Rhode Island Avenue New Carrollton line service. Fully restore Route F1 F2 Chilham Road line service. Fully restore Route Z8 College Park White Flint line service. Fully restore J1, J2, J3 Bethesda Silver Spring line service. Continue to operate Route J7, J9, I-270 Express line service until October 2017. Support modification of the proposed FY18 fare changes described in attachment B as follows. Change the proposed regular fare for airport routes 5A and B30 to $7.50, and change the proposed senior disabled fare for those airport routes to $3.75 or half the regular fare. I further move that once the financial impact of these proposed service restorations and fare changes have been determined, that the expense, revenue and subsidy implications be reflected in an updated budget for the board's approval at the board of directors meeting on March 23rd. I also move that these service restorations be reflected in an updated Title VI equity analysis for the board's approval at the same time.
Ms. Harley, before asking for a second for your amendment, could I suggest that item 2 be deleted since the board just, committee just voted that in terms of Ms. Hudgens' amendment number 2?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. Is there a second for Ms. Harley's?
Second.
Discussion?
Yep.
Mr. Rookestein.
First of all, I would just like to say that this discussion is a different discussion than the one that we'll have more generally on this budget, which I have some real concerns with. But with regard to this, where we started from with the general manager, with some pretty dramatic changes or elimination of service on certain bus lines, I feel a lot better about the way that we have been able to kind of spread out some of the pain that would be associated with this process, and definitely appreciate the fact that the state of Maryland is stepping up to the plate in order to make this happen. I think that these are routes that are very important and are effective, and I hope that you all will support this restoration within the budget. Thank you.
Very good. Other conversation? Other
Mr. Chairman, since you're not going to ask whether it's revenue neutral, I'm going to ask whether these changes are revenue neutral or not.
You're proposing that to the
most of these changes will impact non-regional routes. However, those that may impact the budget might do so because of frequency adjustments. However, our numbers are somewhat similar to Virginia, so we will have an updated analysis of how they impact the budget on the 23rd as well.
Thanks. Very good. Well. Other comments, points for discussion? All in favor of Harley Amendment number 3, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Very good. Harley Amendment number 3 also passes. All right, further discussion on the FY18 operating budget or further amendments? Mr. Orsting.
Absolutely, discussion. We just had a meeting of the customer service committee during which we talked about how this is a very poor report. We are not performing well. Our customer satisfaction is in the 60s, and our ridership is going down, and yet this board is contemplating, in the face of those things, raising fares at a time when we're seeing this decrease in ridership, which would likely further exacerbate that problem. And to me, you know, folks talk about it being more of the right thing to do or whatever. To me, it's more of the same. If you look at what this agency has done in the last 10 years, it has raised fares and it has continued to have ridership drop. We should be doing things differently, not do them the same. We should do things differently and not do them the same. If we're going to turn this thing around, which I believe in and I think is the right thing for us to do, we should do so by encouraging more ridership and not discouraging and planning for such a dramatic decrease in the number of people who are going to ride this system, which is the way that this budget is contemplated and the way that it has been put together. With a switch of belief by management that we will see more people come back, you would make some dramatic changes, obviously, to the way that this budget would appear. I mean, you're showing a dramatic drop in your proposal of revenue by virtue of fewer people being on the system, based on the actions that we're taking. I'm very concerned by that. I'm also concerned that, although you mentioned the fact that you're making the change on the price, or rather you referenced the 7-day fare as the reason or part of the things, that was the least, if you look at the public comment, that was the one that people cared the least about. What they cared about mostly, what they found to be most objectionable, was the raise of the fare on the bus, and yet, again, we're contemplating doing these things when we actually have, and it's been tabled to the next discussion, but we actually have a significant capital budget, $1.25 billion, that we have not scrutinized at all. If we are concerned about an overall subsidy number, which of course I am, we have not scrutinized that at all, which could actually cover the $40 million, the $40 to $50 million that has been discussed in this, which includes those fare increases and includes those service cuts. We could get those back, and I still am going to stand on that, that we could do that and put this agency going forward instead of on this downward spiral of continuing to go down that way. So I firmly believe that this is an approach that we should take, and I stand on that, although I understand that many of my colleagues do not. But I just want to make sure I shared that with the body.
Thank you, Mr. Orsting. Other comments, other discussion? Mr. Dorsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm following Mr. Augustine, and I regret that because this is going to sound like a contrary opinion. It's not intended to, but I do want to speak and say some things that applaud this overall effort. I think developing a consensus around this budget or close to a consensus is an accomplishment for this Finance Committee, and if the board adopts the budget as amended, it will be an accomplishment for the voting board in a couple of weeks. You know, FY18 presented a Herculean challenge for Metro. You know, we have declining revenue, and it's most notably predicated on the fact that we have service that's not meeting the need of our riders, and we have a huge deficit as a result. And the tools available to reduce that deficit, there are no tools that don't cause pain, that are not a challenge, and that don't require sacrifice. So we've got, in one fell swoop, eliminating positions, raising fares, changing service, and subsidy increases that require all of our funding jurisdictions to either defer other necessary investments or to seek tax increases on the general population. This is all extremely hard to digest. And without criticizing past board members, but I can say for public agencies overall, when things get really hard, people often take the path of least resistance. And what that would have meant for us, it would have been, you know, not changing anything, but at the same time, that would have required creating a budget that had wildly inflated revenue projections that we couldn't meet, or projecting a subsidy that none of our funding jurisdictions could afford to pay. So this board had to take the responsible step and do what good governance institutions need to do, and that is to make these difficult choices. And I think the process of arriving where we are today has been to try and mitigate the pain in ways that are sensible for this transit agency to operate. No one likes raising fares, but I think overall the fare increases are necessary. And where we can, what we tried to do with bus-only riders who may be among the most price-sensitive, we've tried to hold them harmless. And I think it's a good proposal to do so. When it comes to the other things that we've talked about in terms of not diminishing the value of bus through either the lifeline service or the critical connections that are available in all of our jurisdictions by restoring those, I think we're adding to the reliability that we need or the satisfaction that we need to keep people connected as much as we possibly can. And I do want to speak again, excuse me, about the rail service restorations by restoring off-peak headways, by coming up with more sensible peak headways. We really should focus on how this can deliver a better customer experience for our rail riders, despite the fact that nominally they are cuts. If we can actually deliver the service that we say we're putting out there, it will be a dramatic improvement. I don't want to underscore that. I want to underscore that. It will be a dramatic improvement. Where people are most dissatisfied is in believing that they're going to have a certain experience, and then when they get into the system, it's dramatically different. If we can deliver on what we say we're putting out there, that will be an improvement. So, you know, look, I'll be honest. I would love to have a situation where we don't have to reduce what anyone is experiencing. But there's nothing that we're looking at next year that allows us the capacity to do that. We need to scrub the capital budget. We need to find savings for it. But it's not simply a one-to-one replacement. A lot of those capital needs are going to be financed long-term. It's not a one-to-one substitution on the yearly operating requirements that we have. So even if we are able to find savings there, which I hope we will, that's not going to exactly solve this problem. And I will just say as one other final point, you know, Mr. Goldman, you raised the $7 million in required or in recommended you know, FTA and other safety obligations that are being added to the budget. While I'm not identifying that particularly, I want to make clear that we expect management to continue to do all it can to find efficiencies elsewhere, that this is not just simply we're solving the problem, and that hopefully gives management the clarity to just go ahead and spend what it desires. We hope that you will try to find efficiencies even further than you can project today, because, and I'm sorry for going on too long, but I can just say for Arlington's purposes, while we're able to figure out how to make this year work, next year scares us to death. And if we don't figure out a way to sort of reduce what we're spending and really just get really creative with being efficient, we could have this conversation even to a higher degree next year. So thank you for indulging me, and I'm sorry for going on too long.
Thank you, Mr. Dorsey. I indulged you because you said what I was going to say if I handed the chair to Mr. Bulger. This has been a very difficult process. We're faced with a very large budget deficit, and I think we've come together in a way to achieve consensus and provide a budget that we can live with going forward. And to do that, we had to have a budget that had shared pain among all our stakeholders, riders, employees, jurisdictions, and I think we're getting there. So thank you very much, Mr. Dorsey, for expressing it so well, and even though it was at length. Thank you. Ms. Hudgens?
Thank you. I just wanted to make sure that we don't leave here and only say that we've cut your service and we've raised fares. I think it's going to be very important that we communicate what we have done. And in some cases, we've become more efficient, or we should be getting more efficient. If there are services that are duplicative, it's an opportunity to save revenue. There are many services that duplicate, and I will point out the airport service. The airport service in Virginia has a duplicate set of buses that go to the airport. Does it mean that that is a problem? It is a problem if we're going to continue that process when we're in tight revenue times, and how do we get efficiency? So what should we be talking about? We should be talking to our customers about what alternatives are and how they can make their trip more efficient, and they can still save dollars. No one wants to raise fares, but really, fares are part of the cost of what we do. And so I understand that it feels very hard to accept, but it really is a difficult decision to make when you have only the subsidy piece that you have to be accountable for and deliver the service as well. And so I hope that we'll talk about what those alternatives are when we look at the services that we're changing so that people can make the best decision now that's available to them. I'm sorry, I think next year to me is an opportunity for us, and it's an opportunity for us to continue figuring out what is the long term for this system that is known to be capable of delivering good service, but that we have to become steady on how we're going to fund that system. And so this is just the beginning step, and I hope that we're going to be more optimistic as we've done this, because it's the first hard one that we've made at this time, and that means cutting and increasing subsidies. So you're going to be asked again, and so hopefully everybody's going to be prepared next year to do that in some form or fashion. Otherwise, I will tell you, you will go back to where we were before. And so I would love to say that no service would be cut and no fares would be increased, but that's a dream, and that's not possible in this jurisdiction, and it's not possible with the partners that we have that are funding this authority.
Very good. Further comment, discussion?
Well, I just wanted to point out that, you know, we were on a two-year cycle of fare increases, okay, and now we're on a three-year cycle. So I think the records show that, you know, we're not raising fares every year. We haven't done it in the last couple of years. And that, you know, we luckily have low inflation, but it's still running around 2% a year. And wages have gone up, so because of collective bargaining agreements that were made on the last union collective bargaining, which was like 4 or 5 years ago, Paul, I believe, 4 years ago, that are still in place. So unless we start printing money in the basement, this is inevitable. Sorry.
I just have to respond really quickly. I understand what you guys are saying, but this is basic economics. You're raising the price, you'll lose riders. He's already built it into the budget. And there's a lifetime value to those riders that we're not considering. I mean, this is from a business standpoint. It's just a bad business decision. I understand what you're saying, but that is a bad business move.
Mr. Corcoran?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. About 15 months ago, Paul, you came on board and you set three priorities: safety, reliability, and sustainability, if I remember correctly. And I think this budget addresses those. I applaud all of the jurisdictions for making sacrifices to allow this to happen. Speaking for the state of Virginia, thank you to the jurisdictions in Virginia for doing that, but also to D.C. and to Maryland. I, perhaps contrary, think it's an awful business decision not to put safety and reliability first. I will not continue to pay the same amount for bad service and for lack of reliability. And so thus, I think this is a very good business decision to improve the product that we are going to offer, because an improved product will bring back riders. And I applaud everybody for stepping forward and doing this.
Thank you. Seeing no further comment, let's take a vote. Well, before taking a vote, just let me ask the secretary and the parliamentarian, do we have anybody participating telephonically in this meeting? I'm sorry?
Corbett Price.
All right. Let's first take a voice vote and we'll see where we go. All in favor of recommending this FY18 operating budget to the full board March 23rd, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
Opposed.
I think the motion passes. Thank you very much. Does the secretary have enough understanding to record that vote in terms of numbers? Thank you.
I'm sorry.
Please check what Mr. Price's vote is.
No, right. I'm on the phone.
Let's move back.
I think he's trying to vote.
Yeah, I'm here.
He's here.
And I've been participating. So you may record my vote in favor of it reluctantly. I do agree with Malcolm, but in the interest of moving this forward from a budgetary point of view, I'm voting affirmatively.
Well, thank you, Mr. Price. All right, let's move back to the agenda today. We'll move on to the second part of our three-part layer cake of issues today, the FY18 capital improvement program and the one-year extension of the capital funding agreement. Mr. Anasaki or Mr. Webster.
Thank you. Through the capital improvement program, Metro advances major capital projects and capital reinvestment programs to improve the safety, state of good repair, reliability of Metro Rail, Metro Bus, and Metro Access. The proposed program, priorities in the proposed program are new 7,000 series rail cars, new buses and paratransit vehicles to replace older and less reliable vehicles, investing in the rehabilitation, repair, and maintenance of the existing fleets of rail cars and buses to improve safety and reliability, installation of infrastructure to support radio and wireless communications, continued investment in rail and bus system infrastructure to improve safety and address state of good repair backlogs, and also reinvestment in rail stations to improve the reliability of escalators and elevators and to improve the overall customer experience. As we reported to the committee last month, capital program delivery continues to improve. 86% of the budget was invested in FY16, and FY17 is on track to meet expectations with the accelerated delivery of rail cars and the Safe Track program leading the way. The proposed FY18 capital budget totals $1.25 billion, $291 million, which, of which will be funded by debt. It assumes continued federal grants, federal funding at current rates. And importantly, more than 85% of the planned investment advances projects and programs that are already underway, meaning that Metro is well positioned for another successful capital investment year in FY18. In FY18, Metro will also begin including capital reimbursable projects within the CIP as jurisdictional projects. The overall six-year CIP totals $7.2 billion, and the foundation of that CIP is those ongoing projects and programs, as well as those critical needs identified in the capital needs, or phase one of the capital needs inventory that was completed last fall. CIP also now includes a structured development and evaluation program, which will advance major capital needs into deliverable capital projects. The proposed FY18 capital budget, the revised capital budget, is largely unchanged from the general manager's December proposal. The overall plan investment remains at $1.25 billion and the six-year plan at $7.2 billion. Capital investment forecasts by category and by program have been updated to reflect current project schedules. As an example, the Cinderbed Road bus maintenance facility is beating schedule expectations in FY17. Which means the 17 budget for and forecast for that project have increased. There's an offsetting adjustment within FY18 as those investments will be made this year rather than next. A project or program going the other direction, there were some initial delays in FY17 and the propulsion program. So the FY17 investment in that program is lower than expected. There's a corresponding increase in FY18 as that program gets caught back up to speed. So overall, over the six-year program, we're largely in the same place as we were a few months ago. The changes are largely adjustments for schedule changes. Finally, Metro and the funding jurisdictions have a capital funding agreement that expires on June 30th of this year. The CFA provides a framework for jurisdictional investment in the CIP, including the match to federal formula grants and discretionary grants, additional state and local contributions called system performance funds, and establishes the structure for Metro's short and long-term debt strategies to support the capital program. The jurisdictions have generally agreed in principle to a one-year extension. Again, we're in a one-year extension now. The original agreement was FY11 to 16. It was extended for 1 year last year, and the consensus is another one-year extension for this year. And it includes the jurisdictional share of the $1.25 billion proposed budget, and as drafted, includes a maximum of $600 million of long-term financing to support the CIP. And the way the schedule is laid out, the Metro Board acts first on the agreement, and then the jurisdictions, the funding jurisdictions, follow with their actions, all before the agreement expires on June 30th. So that concludes the capital portion of the
meeting. Thank you, Mr. Webster. As I said at the beginning of the meeting, we'll have a full and vigorous discussion right now on the FY18 capital budget and the capital funding agreement, but because of some questions that some of the jurisdictions had with some of the particulars in the capital investment program, will actually put off and postpone an actual vote until the Finance Committee meeting on the morning of the 23rd. So to start off the discussion, there were a couple of paragraphs in the resolution that have raised some questions, and I wanted to ask the General Manager to just explain what the intent of those resolved paragraphs are. The first is the next to last resolve paragraph on paragraph 3, which references grant funds currently deemed to be uncollectible with regard to limitations. And then there's, on the following page, there's a resolve paragraph, the third one on page 4, which deals with reprogramming authority. So if you could just explain what the intent of these two resolve paragraphs are in the proposed resolution that we'll address and deal with now and on the 23rd.
Okay, very good. Yes, sir. The first one deals with, as you know, we've been in discussions with the FTA staff in terms of basically recouping some of those funds that were prior to July 15th that we have not been able to pull down. And we're getting to the point where, in effect, they will allow us to apply those two projects into the future. So we're in that negotiations now. If that occurs and they give us final direction, excuse me, we want to be able to move very quickly to use those dollars. I think it's just, given all the uncertainty out there, I think it's important that we do that. They will be projects that basically are in the capital program. They will not require additional jurisdictional dollars. It just gives us the flexibility to pull down those federal dollars as quickly as possible. So that's what that allows us to do. So whether it even plays out, I don't even know, but I'm asking for the authority to do that. The second one deals, it deals with the overall sort of management approach we've taken on the capital program over the last year plus, which is to get our project managers to think much more aggressively in delivering projects and not to be hung up. So if we have a project, for instance, that gets hung up on a permitting issue, rather than sit on those dollars and get to the end of the year where we haven't spent dollars, we know we have a backlog of projects that have been approved. So it's the same issue. We will not go over the overall total of the budget or the jurisdictional request, but gives us the flexibility to move the dollars within those different major pots to deal with projects that are available. What I would also commit to, obviously, is that on the quarterly financial statements that we do, we will go through any of those changes that were made, just so everyone's clear what changes were made. But I think that just puts us in a much more aggressive position to deliver the capital program at the 1.2-plus capital program level that we see and now into the future.
So that is not an authority that would give you a basis to increase the total capital spending over FY18?
No, it moves within, yes. It moves within those limits.
Shifting, it's basically shifting and reprogramming authority. Very good. Other questions, comments? Mr. Augustine?
How much, a couple questions. First one is, how much money is within the $1.25 billion for the development dollars that you talked about? How much is it? How much is it in there?
Overall, it's about $18 million, I believe, in the $18 million.
So just for the benefit of the board, that would be $18 million that in previous years would not have been there. I think that we talked about this is the first time of actually putting a dollar number and allocation into the budget where we haven't done that in the past. Is that correct?
I'm not totally
That's my understanding.
Clear. Yeah, I think what we were trying to reflect there is that we have been historically put in projects that we don't have a good handle on the scope and schedule and budget. And what this is trying to do is set just a process where we know what we commit to before we actually commit to it. So instead of waiting for a project to come along and say, okay, we want that project, now go do it, and we plug in some number based on very little work, this is to say, no, let's build a program of projects that are queued up, ready to go, that basically the region wants. So that's what it's trying to do, is create that queue of those projects for the future. It's very similar to the way that the Maryland capital budget is for their program. They have a whole very large D&E program that basically consensus comes around those projects, so they start to queue up as dollars come available. You know what you've committed to when you put them in.
All right. I understand that. I just was saying that this is different for this budgeting process and the way that it is functioning here. That was my understanding. I won't get into them. I've shared with you, obviously, before, just sort of like the different areas where there should be some opportunities within the station and passenger facilities, bus and paratransit, of course. You have some very big numbers in there that I think that I know that I have been talking with staff. We would like to spend some more time to really better understand. Not talking about the safety and the reliability ones, which I'm 100% on board with. We don't even have to really talk about those. But there are some other projects in here which I think do deserve some more scrutiny, and I'm looking forward to doing that.
Mr. Bulger.
Okay. Since my colleague's so troubled today, I'm going to share some trouble. Why are we extending the capital funding agreement for kick the can another year? OK, Okay? It seems like we kicked the can. So we're doing another kick the can on the capital funding agreement. And what's the rationale for that? I don't know why.
Mr. Osaki, can you just give us a summary of the conversations that have taken place between LaMotta staff and the jurisdictions, the district, Virginia and Maryland, as to why, and Mr. Bolger suggests, we're just kicking the can down the road for another year?
We have had extensive conversations with jurisdictional staff, and as we do with the budget itself, the consensus, for various reasons, including the challenge of committing significant dollars to over the next 6 years to this particular program, as the jurisdictions have struggled to identify those sources of those capital, they've indicated to us that to allow the process to go on, that they are going to commit to a 1 year, again, to give them time to figure out options with respect to the remaining 5 years. That's what we're able to accomplish at this point, which is why, as Tom described, you have a 1 year recommendation before you.
I think it is, but I think it's, if you look at the slide that's entitled Appendix Funding Sources by Year, I think it's 66 of 658, one can see what some of the concerns are, where the ask from the state and local jurisdictions increases by $200 million from the FY18 to the budgets in the further years. And we also see that the big MWA contribution in FY this 18 disappears in the following year. So even though we're maintaining the same total program level of roughly 1.25, 1.26 million, the burden is increasingly is a hit on the local jurisdictions in the out year. So I can understand why there would be some constraint and concern among them before they sign off for an extended period.
I understand, Mr. Chairman, but, you know, it seems to me that the corollary to this is dedicated, stable, and reliable financing, okay? So we're going to kick the can on the capital side, and there's no connection to when the heck we're going to get traction on a regional basis to finance this place.
I think that's a very good point.
And I respectfully point out that we can't even get the safety thing done, you know, and we're, you know, now we've got a gun to our head that goes beyond this metropolitan area by the federal U.S. DOT because Maryland and Virginia can't pass the safety legislation. I mean, this boggles me.
I believe the legislation has passed.
Yeah.
Everybody's a good guy now.
Yeah.
Some people may say it's the federal government's responsibility to know the process by which the states operate as well.
I think, to use your words, we've kicked the can back to the federal government since the three jurisdictions have now approved the Metropolitan Safety Commission. All right. Mr. Dorsey.
Quick question, Mr. Goldman, I promise. So on the previous slide, before we shifted to this one, you just outlined up to $600 million in borrowing authority. I just wanted to verify that that was cumulative, not additional. Thank you, sir.
All right. Very good. All right. Further comments, discussion on the capital budget and CFA this time, or can we move on to the third part of the layer cake and deal with debt issuance? Very good. Mr. Anasecki? Okay, we'll take up the third discussion item, which is a request to refund or refinance a portion of Metro's outstanding debt to achieve some savings, to benefit the authority and jurisdictions, and then to increase Metro's line of credit and long-term debt capacity to support the capital improvement program and to provide flexibility in managing our operating budget cash flow over the next year to 18 months. Mr. Anasecki.
Access the capital markets for the new current ratio, it will give us 7% to 9%. Similar to what I'm trying to do again,
Metro has used debt to finance, to support the capital program. And generally speaking, longer-term debt, as you can imagine, aligns to the capital, long-term life of the capital assets that Metro finances. On the other hand, the line of credit is used primarily to smooth out temporary cash flow dislocations as Metro tries to fund ongoing capital activities. Focusing on the refinancing for a minute, as we all know, periodic changes in the capital markets offer opportunities, you know, to take advantage and lower ongoing operating costs. And so in this particular case, Metro has about $220 million of 09 A and B bonds that could benefit from that exercise. But the level of savings ultimately will be determined by where the market is when, again, assuming the board approves, when we actually approach the market. And the savings, again, we'll go back to the jurisdictions, but the nature and use of those savings will be determined by those jurisdictions. In terms of the lines of credit, Metro currently has two lines of credit, totaling $250 million. But if you recall, the total capacity was actually 302 a few years ago, which we took down intentionally because Metro, as the GM and Tom pointed out several times, Metro was not fully invested in its capital resources, and therefore we were paying availability fees without actually using them. So, but that has changed. And so to make sure in a $3 billion annual budget, you actually need something like $350 million of line, particularly for an organization that doesn't have reserve fund or dedicated revenue. So that's really what this is designed to do. And with respect to the new issuances, the new debt is proposed for the capital program. If you look in the capital program that the board will be considering again next on the 23rd, it does include $441 million to support ongoing capital projects. In addition to that, the board already approved $58.3 million in FY17. And of course, there's, as we've reconciled the FY11 to 16 CFA, there's a piece that's left there. And again, if you recall, the CFA had $440 million of debt in it. The board only authorized $220, so that piece we need to address as we go forward. And so as part of the annual budget conversations, you know, we work with the jurisdictions to determine how much jurisdictions can provide in terms of direct contributions, and the difference is made up through debt. With that, I just want to point out, you know, this is a history of where the markets have been. If you look at when in 09, when the debts were issued, the markets were slightly higher compared to where they are now. And so this is really what we're trying to arbitrage, if you will. And in terms of where we expect the market to be with respect to the new debt, again, this, just looking at the current markets, you know, I think it could be around 4%, but that will depend on several factors between now and then, including what's going on in the capital markets. This slide shows the jurisdictional shares. As you know, each jurisdiction will have an opportunity to opt out, which will ultimately determine the size of the issuance. And assuming everything goes as planned, this is what the debt profile would look like for Metro. Again, if you look at it, I think the key thing is that it will actually look much more longer term than the short term, which is what we have currently. And this describes the timetable, assuming the board approves. With that, Mr. Chairman, I will respond to any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Anasaki. As I said in the beginning, we'll have a vigorous and open discussion of this, but we'll postpone an actual vote on these debt issuance items until the Finance Committee meeting on the 23rd. Let me just kick it off with a question regarding the slide in the beginning where you showed comparative debt profiles. First question, the number that you have at the bottom for WMATA, I believe, is the debt that WMATA would carry if the board approves the increases. Is that correct?
Correct. That's correct.
Thank you. And so even under those circumstances, what's fascinating is that the level of debt WMATA is carrying is so very small, both in an absolute sense as well as in a relative sense as a ratio of debt to assets. Many of these properties that you show are actually smaller than WMATA in terms of ridership, and I would assume in terms of mileage for rail being operated other than the New York MTA. Could you sort of discuss and explain how WMATA got in this position where its debt load is so very small, you know, why it hasn't taken greater advantage and use of the capital markets and long-term debt over the last 7 or 8 years when rates since the Great Recession in 2008 have been so so low?
I hesitate to speak on how we got here. What I can speak to is the fact that while the region as a whole has chosen to provide direct support to WMATA, I think may not necessarily mean that the region itself has not chosen on its own to approach the capital markets directly and make those funds available to us. I think the nature of the compact itself is part of the reason why and the opportunity that we provide to each region, each jurisdiction to opt out is part of the reason why why the picture looks the way it does. But there are several factors, again, that determine whether or not an organization goes to the market, obviously including the overall revenue structure, your ability to pay back. I mean, some of those things are lacking with respect to WMATA itself, but not necessarily with respect to the region.
Is management's view that, two-part question, that this is a good time to go to the market? And the second part is it management's view that WMATA should increase its use of long-term debt so that its relationship, debt to assets, should be closer, or at least higher than it is now and closer to some of these other properties like Chicago, Los Angeles, and BART.
With respect to your first question, if you look at this the current yield curve, you'll see that particularly on the long end of the curve, clearly it is a good time to, I mean, because the spread between those two curves are not that wide, and the slope is also relatively straight. So yes, it is a good time to go to the market compared to where the market was on the previous slide where you saw like in 2009 when actually we went to the market, and to the extent that their funding needs that should be addressed right now, it is certainly time to go to the market.
Thank you. Storm Joe?
Yeah, I've got two questions. One is just a clarification of something that you said earlier. I think if we went back to the comparative slide, you know, in essence, if you factored in kind of the composite debt management of WMATA and the region, the actual debt strategy is much broader than just WMATA's issuance. The funding partners are making interest rate decisions that actually benefit us in the sense that in some cases, in some periods of time, the regional partners can get a better interest rate than WMATA can. And so WMATA's benefiting from those bond proceeds, but they're not showing up, you know, on WMATA's books in terms of this debt-to-asset ratio. So a more complete picture might indicate that we're, you know, not such a dramatic outlier from the other authorities. Is that correct?
That's precisely okay. What I was alluding to. What we don't know is essentially the funds that are coming to how much of that is from
the color of the money. Okay, correct. Right. So maybe that's something we could look at together. That's going to require the CFOs from the jurisdictions having additional phone calls with you, which I'm sure you're really excited about. So So that's the one clarification. Then the second question has to do with the refunding strategy. I totally understand what a refunding is. I just don't understand why this is right, given that you've got a 10-year early redemption restriction. Why would we authorize you to proceed with a transaction that can only occur in 2019? That's my understanding of the 2009 Series A and Bs.
That's actually why it's a refunding instead of which means you're still leveraging the markets where they are now and escrowing those funds, which ultimately pays it off. So you don't need to wait for 19 to do that. But the Bs may not be available, which, again, the authorization that we're seeking will simply allow us to do this, you know, to save the jurisdiction's money if the market is right. If it's not right, we won't do it. But in terms of the legality and the structure, yes, you can actually do that now. And the reason why we can't at this point is because there's an advantage to packaging it with the broader issuance and actually save on transaction costs. So all of this is designed, again, as the general manager said, to be fiscally responsible with respect to the
Okay, so you're gonna escrow if the market timing was right, you would escrow for 2 years and then take out the bonds.
Correct.
In 19.
Correct.
Okay. Fair enough.
I'm sorry, Ms. Mulder.
Just wanted to make a clarification. If you look at the San Francisco Bay Area Rapid Transit debt rate, it's not correct. In fact, in November, the voters in the BART counties by an 81.1% vote approved another $3.5 billion, would it be, bond measure. Okay. So add the $3.5 billion to that $1.3 billion. That's what the BART bond situation is currently. No, I know, but I just want to make a clarification that if you put something on the ballot and you run a good campaign, you can get 81% majority.
But it just bears repeating, Mr. Chairman, that you know, while this metric is very useful for informative purposes, we should not use it because it is not an apples-to-apples comparison with our experience. It is just for conversation and not for useful benchmarking.
Thank you. Other discussion, Mr. Corcoran.
Do we have any idea what the total amount of debt across the region is, long-term debt for Metro? For instance, Fairfax County holds a lot of debt for Fairfax County, for Metro, as does Arlington, as does Alexandria. Is there any cumulative number out there?
Not that I'm aware of.
I'm sorry? Not that you're aware of. Maybe the NVTC should collect that data and we can present it for the 23rd. It's from Maryland. It's from Maryland. I don't know. But Maryland recently has relied on the WMATA debt. Okay. Let me just raise a couple just further questions in reviewing the debt slide. First, on the slide labeled jurisdiction shares, you can push that up there. This is not a substantive question, but there are two columns labeled FY 2017 approved with different sets of numbers. So I assume that one of them is something else. Since we're going to have another meeting, could you look into that?
I can respond to that now if you wish. If you recall, with respect to the original budget, the general manager reduced the total ask to 950. And as part of that was $58.3 million of debt. In addition, we came back to the board in November of last year to increase the overall budget, but without going to the jurisdictions to request funding at that time. But we did advise the board that we will be seeking repayment at a later date. That's what that $150 million represents.
So the right-hand FY 2017 approved column is really the revised FY 2017 budget, and the left-hand FY it was the original as presented in November, December of last year. Okay, we can just get a revised slide for the 23rd. I think that would be good. Second question, just to be clear on what the debt resolution would actually do if adopted by the committee and the board. As I read it, I'm just seeking confirmation, this would be an authorization for staff to proceed with the debt issuance, but the board would have a second vote at some time a few months later once the staff comes back to the board with a final recommendation on the interest rate that will be available for that debt issuance and what the other transaction costs would be. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So that we're essentially on these debt issuances for benefit of new members and the public, we will take two votes. One vote would be the vote to authorize the staff to move forward, and the second would be a vote after the staff tells us what the rates would be to actually go forward with the issuance. Is that correct? Thank you. Okay, any other questions before the board? If not, thank you very much for your presentation. The Finance Committee meeting is adjourned, and we will see you again on the morning of the 23rd. Thank you.